I want to turn now to foreign policy. Much of the story of interwar British foreign policy can be presented as dealing not with the First World War, but with the consequences of the various peace treaties made between the Allies and the defeated powers after 1918. With the ink almost still wet on the Treaty of Versailles, the economist John Maynard Keynes published his book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace. This argued that the terms of the Treaty of Versailles were too harsh. And very rapidly, a consensus developed among politicians and the public that Germany had been treated too harshly and that the treaty should be revised. Policymakers also subscribed to the view that for real peace it would be necessary to obtain Germany's willing assent to its new borders. So for the entire 1920s, British policy was focused on treaty revision. That meant both reparations and borders, especially those of Germany. And in the early 20s, a series of attempts were made to revise downwards Germany's reparations liabilities. And those attempts would continue until the end of the decade. There was steady progress and even a temporary moratorium on payments until Hitler eventually renounced reparations entirely. If there was steady progress on reparations from the early 20s, it was not until 1925 that there was any serious movement in terms of Germany's borders. Then, Germany willingly agreed its western borders in the Treaty of Locarno. And when that treaty was signed, it was widely hailed as marking the end of the era of the First World War. The former Prime Minister Arthur Balfour wrote in grand terms to Austen Chamberlain, the British Foreign Secretary who had negotiated Locarno. Balfour said, "The Great War ended in November 1918. The Great Peace did not begin till October 1925. There really did appear to be a new mood." However, I think the legacy of the war had not run its course at Locarno. And for all that appeasement in the 1930s is now seen as a shocking piece of political weakness, utterly misguided, we should remember that it was well supported at the time. Efforts by anti-appeasers like Winston Churchill and Leo Amery partly fell on deaf ears because the vast bulk of the population and politicians believed that standing up to Hitler would be more likely to lead to war than allowing him to have what at first appeared to be fairly limited ambitions. Remember that the orthodox view in Britain was that Germany had been punished too much after 1918. So, for example, when Hitler remilitarised the Rhineland in March 1936, many in Britain agreed with Lord Lothian's view that Germany had merely moved troops into its own backyard. A further factor which influenced support for appeasement and was directly attributable to the First World War was the horror of war. Remember that the conflict had been described as the Great War to End All Wars. A vast outpouring of literature in the 1920s had brought home to people the true horrors of the fighting. However, we should be careful about seeing fear of war as solely stemming from memory of the previous conflict. Air warfare had been relatively limited in 1914-18, and although London and other parts of the country were bombed, damage was relatively light. In the years after the war, however, air power developed apace. By the mid-1930s, it was very apparent that aerial bombardment, potentially of civilians, could be a major part of any future conflict. This was very much in Stanley Baldwin's mind when he said to the House of Commons on the 10th of November 1932, "I think it is well also for the man in the street to realise that there is no power on earth that can protect him from being bombed. Whatever people may tell him, the bomber will always get through." Baldwin's words here are extremely important, for they sum up the fear of a future war arising from developments in the 20s and 30s, rather than by making specific reference to the Great War. When German planes bombed Guernica in 1937, during the Spanish Civil War, The effects of bombing civilians could be seen in reality, and that was to give added impetus to the policy of appeasement.